Okay, good. If you're on Instagram, can you let me know that you can hear? Ooh, there you go.
Hi, everybody. Oh my God, I'm so close.
Well, Isabel gets herself situated. We're talking about a new treatment for parvo, which is super exciting. It looked like you had a ton of notes. I have some notes. And what I wanted to start off with is something that I found when I was researching on Bark and Whiskers, which is the new site for Dr. Karen Becker, because she was on Mercola. Now she's on Bark and Whiskers. 91% of untreated cases of canine parvovirus are fatal.
Yes, I saw that as well.
What? I mean, I knew it was bad. I didn't quite realize it was 91% until I looked it up.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. It's bad. I mean, that's without any treatment. So obviously,
Yes,
with
without treatment.
treatment, there is probably a better number that I did not find, but there's obviously a better number. But treatment consists of 3 to 5 days in ICU. It consists of thousands upon thousands of dollars of veterinary bills, and it is not guaranteed. So you're looking at $5,000 for a treatment that may not work. So it is really kind of a gamble in a
It
way
is a
as a
gamble.
pet parent.
And I think what I mean, so obviously, like the scare, the fear around it is not unfounded.
Exactly.
And so Betsy is joining us from Nutrivore Pet Health Coach. So thank you so much for letting me know that you could hear. And one of the things that I was going to bring up, and maybe you were too, and Betsy would be super interested in this, is the use of fecal transplant in parvo cases. So that is something that is not talked about very much. It's not widely available either, but something that we can talk about a little later on in the episode, because like you were saying, if a puppy does get canine parvovirus, which we just call parvo. I'm just going to
Yeah,
keep saying parvo. Like, I
we're gonna
just
call it
want to
parvo for sure.
clarify what
Yeah.
it is. I know that it is canine parvo. I'm just calling it parvo because that's what we all call it. You do have to have, like, the quicker you can get into the veterinarian, the better. Better ch chances you have. So get there right away. Like, don't put it off. Don't wait. It is going to require round-the-clock care, which is why it's so expensive. Antibiotics, IV fluids, they have to, keep pumping electrolytes in because, this virus is, there's a lot of diarrhea. And so your dog is getting really, really dehydrated. So they're not able to maintain their electrolyte levels because of the dehydration. And I think that's one of the more like severe parts of it
Yes,
is the dehydration.
absolutely.
So that's why it
And
is so
it's
expensive.
and it usually affects the younger
Yes,
puppy
puppies.
populations. So they have a very immature immune system. They don't have they're tiny, right? So they don't have a lot of wiggle room when it comes to hydration and electrolytes. Like they're tiny, they need everything they can get. And this particular treatment that we're going to talk about was tested on puppies as young as 6 weeks. It is conditionally approved by the USDA starting at 8 weeks. So I'm not sure why it didn't get approved or as early as 6 weeks, but it was tested, safely tested. So it seems like it's a pretty gentle treatment on these puppies, especially compared to what the actual virus will do. So it's really encouraging because it's something similar to what we saw during the COVID pandemic. It's a, they inject kind of like immunotherapy. It's basically, the treatment itself is called canine parvovirus monoclonal antibody. The acronym for it is CPMA, and it was developed by a company called Elanco. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Do you
That's
know
how
how we're
I would
supposed to?
say it.
Okay.
That's how I would say
And
it.
they actually studied how much, I took this note because I thought it was interesting. Elanco studied how much education there is on parvovirus, and I personally believe that parvovirus is one of those things that everybody in the rescue community knows about, every volunteer that's ever stepped foot in a shelter knows about. Obviously, the veterinary community knows about it and dreads it, but the average pet parent may not know about it unless they're faced with it, unfortunately. And what they found was that only 44% of total dog owners actually know what parvo is, and 20% of those that they surveyed had no idea what parvo was. So, like, this is one of those things where your dog is, you're probably a puppy, is having an uncontrollable diarrhea, uncontrollable vomiting, is so lethargic that you know something has gone terribly wrong. You go to the vet, and then all of a sudden it's parvovirus. And that's when you start realizing this is really serious, this is very expensive to treat, and the chances of it being successful in previous modalities, with previous modalities. Was, maybe 50-50 if somebody knows like a better percentage of success rates, we'd love to know that number because 91% of untreated parvovirus is fatal. But with all these interventions that Jessica talked about, antibiotics for secondary infections, hydration, IV fluids, all those things that they do, I don't know what the survival rate is, but it's still not as high as I'm sure a lot of pet parents would want it to be.
Yeah, and I would imagine one of the reasons that it would be hard to have a statistic like that is because it is so expensive to have such intensive care, especially for a puppy. I mean, can you imagine like how many people get a puppy, right? Like somebody down the street from you, their dog just had a litter of puppies. They're finally turning 8 weeks old. You go get one and bring them home. So, like, you have nothing invested in this dog, and all of a sudden, they are uncontrollably, diarrhea, vomiting. They're sick as a dog, right? And you take them to the vet, and they're like, we have to get your dog, we have to get this puppy into the ICU. What I saw was somewhere, but depending on how long the dog has to be in ICU, somewhere between $3,000 and $8,000.
Yeah.
And so, how many of these dogs either go back home and die because they're not getting treatment, or they just put, I don't, maybe even euthanize them because they know what they're about to go through and they can't afford it. And so, like, that there would be one reason why I could imagine that we either don't have statistics, or if we did find statistics, they would be significantly skewed.
So
Because that's so expensive.
I looked at a USA Today article about this particular treatment that came out late last year, and they interviewed a doctor, a veterinarian, Andrew Cabrera. He is the veterinarian and medical director at the Fix Project in California. They were one of the first veterinary practices to actually use this treatment, the CPMA, and he was quoted as saying, he was quoted as saying whatever Kim is saying. And also, on top of that, he was quoted as saying, lately, especially during COVID, treating these puppies was tough. I was giving out bills of $5,000 for 3 to 4 days of hospitalization. I don't mind giving a big bill like that if we're saving the pet, but when we're losing them and it's not the first day, not the second day, it's usually 3 days into treatment of holding on to them and caring for them, that sucks. So, yeah, like people are hoping, first day rolls by, second day the pet is stable, third and fourth day after incurring that much expense and that much time and emotional turmoil, your pet doesn't make it. It's just so hard on these immature systems that it's really hard to know if it's going to succeed. So yeah, I can understand why a pet parent would say, I can't afford $5,000 and a bat and an undesirable outcome anyway. So they choose euthanasia, the more compassionate outcome, because it does reduce their suffering in many cases. And then, they maybe learn their lesson for future about what to do about parvo. But parvo is super contagious. So that's another thing that was interesting when I was looking at this antibody. is that it actually, there still needs to be more testing, but it actually reduced the shedding in the feces. So that was really encouraging because something as, you know, as contagious as parvo, because everybody, again, who's worked in rescue or has any, you know, any kind of information rescuing a pet, especially a puppy, you are told, like, do not take them here, there, and everywhere. Wait till their first round of vaccines, because this is so contagious and it is shed in feces. Yeah. So even if your pet walks on, you know, the grass out front, outside your front door, but a dog that had parvo recently defecated there, it could still be live and it still could be transmissible. So it's very, very, it's very encouraging that the shedding was reduced after this treatment, because again, like, the veterinary practices that are handling this, they don't want to shut down, and they don't want other pets to get exposed. So the fact that this treatment not only helps the pet in question, but also those around him is super encouraging. And I'm impressed that the study found it to be so effective.
Yeah.
Granted, it was only 28 puppies and they were all 8 weeks old and not one of them died. It was 100% success rate. Again, compare it to 91% fatality when untreated. That is super encouraging.
And so really quickly, Cowboy Cat Wrangler joined and said, when do you think they will have more treatment for feline parvo? So I do want to talk about that in just a minute, but really quickly, back to your point of the CPMA, canine parvovirus monoclonal antibodies, they may not be available everywhere right now just yet, but the really great thing, even though it was a small sample size, 28, I think you just said, $200 a vial.
Yeah.
Think about that. Even with, say, a veterinarian marks that up to, I don't know, even $1,200, right? Like, that is such a huge difference. And that's probably way more than a veterinarian would mark it up, but I'm just, you know, trying
to let's just say they double
crazy out there.
600. Yeah.
Yeah. That is so much less expensive than round the clock ICU care.
Absolutely.
For a pet for 3 to 5 days.
Absolutely.
So, so wonderful. But what I want to say about feline parvo, two things. One, we always see things happen for cats way after we see them happen for dogs. I think two reasons. One is because cats are just so much more difficult to work with. And so researchers don't want to work with them. And I mean, that's
facts.
That's just fact. Like, that's not me being mean.
There are veterinarians that don't want to work with cats. I mean, like, really, like, they are difficult to work with.
Also, and just again, a statement of fact, I think, and I kind of see this really, really slowly changing, but historically, people, I'm just speaking here in the United States, people don't generally provide the same level of care for cats than they do dogs, as far as like veterinary care and things like that go. Even people that feed their dogs like the best food in the world still may feed their cats kibble. And that's just, again,
in my house, it's the opposite, but yes, you're right.
Right? No, same. I get that. That isn't the case for Isabel or myself or probably anybody watching listening to this.
Exactly.
However, that's just, again, a statement of fact of where things are in the country. That said, if we... I think it's just time for people to walk down the street at my house right now.
It's 4 p.m. Of course it is. How dare they take a walk?
Right.
How dare they?
That said, when I was looking at Dr. Becker's blog on this parvovirus monoclonal antibody treatment, I had actually seen this a few weeks ago when she originally posted about it, because she said, guess what? By the way, there's also this other really effective treatment that nobody is talking about, and that's FMT, or fecal microbiota transplant. And that is available for cats. So if we're just talking about treatment for cats for parvo, even though we may not have this monoclonal antibody for cats, and now I'm getting an Amazon delivery. Fecal transplants are available. And that is also effective.
So, I mean, it's effective for so many things. I have a relative that just had a fecal transplant for C. diff. So, like, these things are super effective. And what the way that this particular thing works is kind of similar to a fecal transplant in that it protects the gut. This is meant to protect the gut from having. You want to mute? Do you want to mute yourself until I let me mute you? Let me mute you. Okay, I'm gonna mute her until. She gives me, give me a thumbs up and then I'll give you the floor again. But this works very similarly to that in that it protects the cells of the gut so that it, the immune load is lowered. So the body doesn't get attacked as much by this virus as it would otherwise. And then also one thing that we should know is that it's what the treatment actually entails is just one injectable. It's one time, one shot, and it is basically, every year, about 330,000 dogs are affected with parvo. So think about how easy it would be to give all those dogs one shot and like save their lives. And right now, I went on the Elanco website just to see if they had finally gotten the USDA full approval. It doesn't say anything about whether or not the approval status has changed since the USA Today article said that it was conditional. But it does say that they are selling it. So veterinarians can go on the website and order it from the USA Today. Is that what I just said? USA Today.
Well, you started with
USA Today, yeah.
Elanco, and
Yeah,
then, yeah,
USA
thanks.
Today. So according to USA Today, it's based, the approval is also state specific. So if you can't get in your state, it may not be your veterinarians, it may just be the state. So conditional approval is in California because the first one of the first veterinary practices to use it, it was actually the Fix Project in California. It's overseen by that doctor I quoted earlier, and they actually used it. There's a story if you Google it that it's a pit mix who was 8 weeks old named Cookie, who was the first dog who got this treatment, and her life was saved. She definitely came in, as most do in dire straits. Her pet parent did not know what parvo was, did not expect that diagnosis, and thankfully they were in possession of that, of the CPMA treatment, one shot, and her life was saved. And they've used it since. So I know it's in California. I wasn't able to see what other states, but as far as the Elanco website was concerned, it didn't say anything about like not shipping to these states or anything like that. So veterinarians or even, pet parents that have puppies, you might want to call your vet and just ask before you bring your puppy home, if you're getting a new puppy, hey, by any chance, have you heard about this treatment? Do you know anybody in the area who has it? Just to have it, in your toolkit. Because, I mean, this is truly such a violent virus when it comes to puppyhood that it's nice to have kind of like that peace of mind that this may exist near you. And if it doesn't, you'd know, the closest place to get it if you needed to.
I think I may have found a statistic that you were looking for. So I was going back to Dr. Karen Becker's blog, and she was talking about the FMT treatment being effective, but the control group in that in the study for the FMT, so the control group was getting standard care, so antibiotics, IV fluid, electrolytes, that thing. They had a 36.5% death rate. So even with getting standard care, 36.5% death rate versus the puppies who received the FMT treatment along with standard care, 21.2%. So there is still, even with getting, like you were talking about earlier, spending that $3,000 to $8,000, for parvo treatment, still more than a
Oh my
third
gosh.
are gonna die,
Yeah.
right?
So another thing that this is really important for, which I think is something, obviously we want the pets to survive. Obviously we don't want pet parents spending $8,000 only to lose their pet. How traumatic and how devastating could that, is that, you know, you give your all and then you still don't get the outcome you wanted. But something that really affects, that parvo really affects, is the mental health of veterinarians, veterinary community, rescuers, shelter workers and volunteers, because it is devastating to see adorable puppies just die. You know, it's a death sentence in most cases. Most people have trauma from it because they've seen these pets die. They do all they can. They're so defeated. So something like this is not just hopeful for the pet. It's hopeful for the whole community, because we don't want to see a litter of 8 puppies come in and only one survive. We don't want to see that. That's horrible. All the people that go into this is to save the pets, is to help the pets, not to watch them die. So that's one thing that I wanted to mention that is so important about these kinds of treatments and these kinds of developments and these improvements that we see. We have to celebrate not only for the pet, but for the whole community, especially our veterinarians, who are already so overworked, so emotionally taxed, and they want a little hope every once in a while. So this is like a great thing. I want to see more pharmaceutical companies kind of dig into these types of things. Obviously, we've seen it be effective here. We've seen it be effective with COVID, you know, survival rates when people received a monoclonal antibody were higher with COVID patients too. So like, there are a lot of viruses that I feel like we can try this with. And I look forward to seeing more pet specific, you know, pharmaceuticals looking into other treatments for things like this.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting, that was, I was going to bring up the veterinarians as well, or just anybody working veterinary medicine. I've heard from so many people, like, it's unmistakable, the smell. They're like, you get to the door of one of these places, like a veterinary office, and it's like this unmistakable smell that they're like, you can't get it out of your clothes. You know, like, you walk up to the building and you know it. Like, they have parvo puppies in here. And it's just so sad. It breaks my heart. Because it's, you know, we can't do much about viruses.
No.
They're here.
They're part of life.
They're everywhere. They're a part of life. So, and, you know, we can get in the weeds and talk about, you know, regardless of what we do health-wise with our dogs and our cats, all puppies, all kittens, they're born with, you know, their mother's immune system, basically, that starts to wane over the first few weeks of their life, as their immune system is supposed to spike and start developing. And so the healthier the parent, the healthier the mother is, I think the better chance the puppies have in the first place. So we can kind of get in the weeds about, you know, especially with animals that are intact, you know, taking better care of them. And, you know, if we think about traditional Chinese veterinary medicine, we're born, all of us, humans, animals, all of us, we're born with what's called jing, which is our life force. We have a certain amount of it. And if we are constantly sick and we're blowing through it and blowing through it, we have to provide, it's called postnatal jing, an external source of essence, of life essence, and that is through food. It's the only way. We have what we have when we're born, and the only other way to nourish our life essence is through food. So not to get too, like...
No, it's true. I agree. I mean, if you are breeding a dog, hopefully you're doing your due diligence in checking their genetics before you breed them, in feeding them the highest quality diet, in taking care of those two, you know, sources of life as best you can. And then also supporting the mom through the lactation period, right?
Yeah.
They eat so much that I think in many situations, especially in a rescue situation, they're just feeding them whatever they have. Like, it's not like they can invest in like high quality foods and raw goat's milk and things like
Right.
that. But
Yeah.
when you are buying from a breeder, ask what they're feeding that mom during the lactation process. Ask questions that might lead you to understand what kind of care that mom is getting, what kind of genetic testing has been done before the breeding even happened, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. From a perspective of a rescue, just assume that the mama is not receiving optimal care because they don't
Absolutely.
have the resources to do that. So what can you do to support your puppy when you get home? That's something that you, before you even bring your puppy home, you can talk to somebody like Jessica to have a plan in place that not only supports, your pet during the weaning process, but those first very critical, like 2 months time that they're in your home from like 8 weeks to say like 16 weeks. Those are very, very, very key periods, not only for socialization but for health and for all those things. So having that plan in place, also having a layer that is this treatment in case something happens, obviously discussing vaccination schedules with somebody that knows them and knows what your goals are is so important, because we just bring home our pet and hope for the best. But I was a breastfeeding mom, and I supported myself with vitamin D and very high levels and all these things that I knew to do because my body was going to be taxed during those first, postpartum months. It's no different for dogs.
Right. And we don't know it for shelter dogs, for rescue dogs. We don't know a lot of these things. But another question to ask a breeder is how the dog was born. Because if an animal is born through C-section, versus a vaginal birth, a vaginal birth, they're getting so much wonderful bacteria. That is the establishment of the microbiome, the gut biome, the skin biome, all of it. So an animal born through C-section is not getting that. So that's another really good question to ask if you do happen to purchase from a breeder, is to know that. Because I mean, I know people, humans that were born through C-section who just cannot get out of a cycle of sickness.
I mean,
It's
I
just
killed myself to have vaginal births for a reason, right? You know what I mean? Like, there are moms that really will do everything we can to ensure a vaginal birth for that same reason, because you do miss out. And there are some really cool practices that they do now for humans, where it's like vaginal seeding and things like that, that can help reestablish that, even if C-sections are necessary, which there's no shame in a
Yeah,
C-section.
right.
You have to have it. You have to have it. It's a life-saving procedure for many, many, many people and many babies. But there are ways to kind of reestablish that microbiome, whatever you want to call it, after birth with these techniques that some doctors are open to and some are not. So it's, again, it's about finding the medical provider, the veterinary provider that matches your goals and understands what you want and maybe has, precautionary items on hand, like this treatment, so that you know that you are covered across all bases. And it's also, to me, you and I talk about this all the time, Jessica, it's all about preventative, right? So like, once you've already found yourself with a parvo diagnosis, it's kind of late to worry about anything that we're talking about, but it's so great to plan to optimize your puppy's first few weeks with you, because they usually are adopted after 8 weeks. Those first few weeks are so important. And like, we all think about buying the bed and buying the toys and buying the this and buying the that, but like, that's just nonsense. The most important thing for a puppy that young is his health, it's his diet, it's his exposure and his immune system and supporting the immune system. So before you go out and buy like a super expensive nonsensical item, talk to somebody, your veterinarian, a veterinary coach online, a holistic coach, a holistic veterinarian. Establish a relationship. I'm always about establishing relationship and building a pet care team like you and I've talked about that includes these people that can give you tips before you even bring your pet home.
Yeah. And it is this, I think a lot of people do know, especially if you do get your new puppy into the veterinarian right away after you adopt them or rescue them or whatever you're buy them, whatever you're doing, you know, your veterinarian is going to tell you, like you were saying earlier, don't let them walk around outside. Don't let them walk on the floors of Home Depot or wherever you're going. And it's for whatever reason, like in people's minds that I need to get my dog out here to socialize them. But socialization is so much more than Home Depot and dog parks.
Yes.
You know, this is a really great time.
Yes.
This is a really, really great time to socialize them in other ways inside of your home with you, to build a bond with you. By the way, this is a perfect time for you to be building that bond with your dog and socialize them to different noises, socializing them to different textures, socializing them to being touched, to having their paw pads touched, to being able to put your fingers in their mouth, to brush their teeth, to trim their nails. There's so much more to socialization than just going to the dog park.
No,
so,
there is everything, everything before going to the dog park. Like, do not go to the dog park. If the severity of parvovirus is not threat enough, $5,000 treatment, you know, 91% death rate, just know that your puppy can be attacked at a dog park. There is no reason why a dog that young should ever step foot in a dog park just because of the illnesses, the threats to their safety, and bad experiences can have the opposite effect of what you want from that socialization, right? So you don't want your dog to have a huge scare with a white fluffy dog and forever look at white fluffy dogs like they are, I don't know, Godzilla. So just know that dog parks, I'm totally against dog parks at any point in time, like at any age, personally.
Yeah.
But especially in the first year of life, I just worry so much about so many things that can happen. And it's such a sensitive time. And we take such care of our human babies, but then because our puppies grow so fast, we kind of are like, oh, they're fine. It's like, this is a 15-year lifespan, if not longer, hopefully. And so the first year of life, like, sets a lot of foundations for that long life that you hope to attain for your dog.
Yes. So just to recap, no dog parks. Let's recap. No dog parks. 91% of parvo cases, if untreated, are fatal. FMT. So I was just going back to Dr. Becker's blog. The FMT, which is fecal microbiota transplant, it, along with supportive care, reduced the death rate from 36% to 21%. So that alone is a pretty good start. And then the CPMA, canine parvovirus monoclonal antibodies. Again, I mean, you know, I'm sure we could get in the weeds with more studies need to be done, blah, blah, blah. We don't know the long-term effects. All of that is true. But when we're looking at a 91% fatality rate without treatment, plus the fact that this is only $200 a vial, they're saying, I don't know if you saw this, they're saying it takes treatment from down from 1 week of treatment in probably ICU to 24 hours with one $200 vial of monoclonal antibody treatment. So we're, you know, do I want to know what this is going to do to them long term? Absolutely. But they're not going to have a long term if there's no intervention. So, you know, we always have to weigh the risk reward with everything we do for our pets. And for parvo, in my opinion, right now, based on what I'm seeing right now, this is worth it.
Sign me up for sure. I actually have a controversial thing to say. Well, it's not controversial for me, but I've not discussed this with Jessica. This is my opinion only. But just because that there is this treatment out, I don't want people saying, oh, the parvo vaccine is not necessary. For me, the parvo vaccine is one of the most important vaccines you can ever give your pet. Your dog in this case. And I personally don't want anybody leaving this conversation thinking, oh, now that this is available, I don't need to vaccinate. against parvo. So that's my opinion. That is what how I handle parvo vaccinations in my home. I know that vaccinations are a big controversial boogeyman topic, but I felt like I needed to say that before mm-hmm. we wrap up, just because I don't want anybody thinking, oh, if my pet gets parvo, I'll just get this treatment. Period.
Yeah. So I just pulled up Dr. Lori Kosher, Healthy Dog Workshop, her vaccination protocol for puppies, and she is recommending a parvovirus vaccine at 10 weeks, the DAP, which is distemper, adenovirus, and parvovirus at 14 weeks. So that's already two. 17 weeks, titer for distemper and parvo. So if you get the titer back and it's inadequate, repeat the DAP, distemper, adenovirus, parvovirus. So even, yes, so that's what I follow is Dr. Lori Kosher's guidelines, and she is absolutely saying vaccinate.
Yes, and this does not change that, because
right.
vaccinations are only as effective as they are. So this is kind of like a layer of protection against parvo, is that vaccine, then this treatment if needed, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you know, if this treatment doesn't work, then we have the other options, like the hydration and the antibiotics for secondary infections and all those things. So these are all layers that, you know, they're not meant to be standalones, I don't think, at least. So I wanted to say that, and I'm glad that, you know, I don't know if that's going to change, you know, based on these findings and what this treatment can offer long term. But it's important that, you know, I know of a very, very influential, holistic, I guess, public figure. I don't know that they have any credentials that off the top of my head, but they had a dog get parvo, and this person is pretty anti-vax, and they obviously chose not to vaccinate their pet at all. And I see this a lot because I'm in a lot of holistic mom groups and stuff, and they'll ask, like, how about, you know, this is my opinion about kids, but what about pets? And everybody, you know, jumps on that post and says no vaccines, and I'm like, because one thing is being holistic and another thing is being irresponsible. So this particular person was irresponsible, in my opinion, and did not. And I don't know that they were able to save the pet. I know they spent a ton of money. I kind of disengaged from that conversation because it was so hard to read all the comments and read all the recommendations that were being given. And it's important to recognize that, like, there are some things that are non-negotiable. And for a puppy of 8 weeks, especially you get those that first, you know, 3-4 months of life, the parvo virus, if you get it from a rescue, it's going to have the parvo vaccine. Like, it's going to have it. They're not going to let that pet leave unless they receive those core first vaccines. And then if you get it from a breeder, you know, they may already come vaccinated, but some breeders expect you to do it. So just make the right decision. You can pick and choose later, but this is not a time to risk, I don't think, you know, your pet's safety, literal safety and well-being in the first few weeks of life.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Especially, you know, as we were saying earlier, rescue dogs, shelter dogs, we have no idea how healthy their mom was. We have no idea their genetic history. We have to make the assumption that their immune system is not going to be up to par.
Right.
So support it from day one. Do everything you can to support their immune system. And, you know, hopefully they'll be able to handle any viruses that come their way. Yeah. But parvo is just such a nasty one.
It really is. And it's so contagious too. So, yeah. Right? Like, you know, you love your neighbors, you love your community. Don't bring parvo into it because you decided that you were going to take a risk. One question that I have for you, Jessica, because I know you're so well connected. Do you have any resources for those joining us or those listening to this later about, you know, like a puppy protocol that they could find online? Are there any specific, you know, experts that you follow or yourself maybe that have like a, you know, a blog about it or who specialize in puppyhood, like holistic puppyhood or something like that? Do you know anybody? Because I can't think of anybody outside the training and behavior area that specializes in puppies.
For like building up their immune system?
Yes, for like diet and yeah. immune system and just yeah. socialization, yeah. like the basics.
I don't know if I know anybody with puppies specifically. Specifically, Dr. Katie Woodley would be the first one that I would go look for something like that. She has a really incredible program that's like for the life of your dog. It's very, very highly focused on gut health, which is where the bulk of the immune system lives, right? 70%. I think it depends on where you look, somewhere between 70 and 80%, depending on which blog you're
Yeah.
reading.
Yes.
It lives in the immune. I try to go with 70%, and it lives in the immune
Yeah.
system, or it lives in the gut. So I know she has a program that would be good for dog for puppies, and it's for the lifetime of the pet. So what you learn, you can always apply. I would
And
have
also,
to.
Dr. Harvey's joined earlier, and I just did a Google search saying supporting puppy immune system, and one of the first blogs is how to boost your dog's immune system, 8 simple ways. It's specifically for dogs, so it's something to look at. But if you or Dr. Harvey or anybody have any resources that you can share with us specifically to puppy in those first 2, 3 months where they come back home with us from either a breeder or from a rescue, that would be so helpful because I think, like I
Yeah.
said, that first year is so important. I breastfed my children over 2 years each, 3.5 for one of them. I won't say which one because they might be embarrassed later in life, but it was so important to me because that builds the immune system and is so good for both mom and child with, cancer prevention, obesity prevention, all those benefits. So, that's why I made that a priority for my children. And right now with my cat that I just got, he was about 8 weeks, I'm sorry, 8 months when I got him. And, he's been getting the highest quality food I can afford, freeze-dried food, only wet food, no kibble. I'm very careful about the litter we use to make sure it's not toxic to him. So, because the younger they are, the more these things affect them. There's so much toxic load in our environment. I've always cleaned with like clean products, so I'm not worried about Van Gogh at this point being exposed to that because there's nothing of that in my house. But all these little things are so much of a load on these new immune systems that it's like so much more important. And then we kind of don't think of puppies as much, and then we kind of let our adult dogs do their thing, and then it's when they're seniors that we're like throwing everything at them to reverse the damage we've done. But that might not be the best way.
No, and I mean, you said it, like food is the foundation of health. So feeding the best food we can possibly give them, keeping their environments clean, keeping, making sure they're getting. I was just talking to a client right before this call, and she had no idea. So, and I forget all the time that I know things that other people don't know, right? So she was like, I was telling her we needed to be or pr give the dog living water, and she was like, "What?" So, we want to make sure we're providing like ideal in an ideal circumstance, water that has been filtered, that does not have chlorine, does not have fluoride, and then you're going to wind up with dead water, and so then we need to add trace minerals back to it, so that we're actually hydrating our
Right.
bodies. And this goes for you and your
Humans too.
pets.
Yes,
Yes,
exactly.
you and your pets. I mean, that's one of the like most basic needs. Our bodies are like over 70% water or something like that. I don't know the actual percentage off the top of my head,
Yeah.
but I mean, our dogs and cats are mammals just like we are, and their bodies are primarily water as well. And is like the most basic thing we can do is to provide real, actual hydration with living water.
Yes.
So yeah.
It's the same reason we use electrolytes and stuff in our water. I have a reverse osmosis filter in my house. The whole house filtration system, all of that was an investment.
Yeah.
But I could not stand the smell of chlorine coming out of the water in my shower and in my tub. Like I wasn't enjoying my
Yeah.
baths because all I could smell was chlorine, and There are a lot of ways you can look up the quality of your local water. And El Paso is supposed to have decent water. Doesn't smell like it. You know what I mean?
Right?
Like, it doesn't seem like it. So these things are investments. They're a big deal, and they're for the whole family, not just for our pets.
Well, and so we have a filter that filters out the chlorine. We have a water softener, all the things, and we still, so apparently the city we get our water from has been doing maintenance on the water pipes, or I don't know. I don't know how any of this stuff works. I don't deal in infrastructure. But it literally it clogged up, it's clogging up our faucets from whatever is going on, whatever they are doing, whatever work they are doing. So I'm like, I'm brushing my teeth in this water. Like, this is so gross.
Yes,
I'm
so
bathing
gross.
myself in this water. It is so gross.
So for those that have a fridge filter, I mean that's better than your tap water, right? So like let's start with that. Like you have a
Absolutely.
fridge filter, and then for those who don't know, there are also filters that attach to your fridge that are additional, like they're like $250, and they filter your fridge water before the fridge filter filters it. So that's just in your fridge a secondary step. So then that way you're doing a double filtered water because the fridge filter can only do so much. We all know that. It's better than the tap water, but then these are just steps that are more affordable that you can implement if you have that fridge that that filters water and pours it out for you. So that's something that we did in a di we have like four filters, and it has really made a difference. For my skin, for my kids' skin. I mean, I don't worry as much as, they love their baths and their bath bombs. And obviously, we spend money on really high quality bath bombs only to put them in like really low quality water. That doesn't make sense. So now I can feel comfortable with them soaking in the water for extended periods of time. And that's what our pets are drinking when we refill it from the tap. So, I mean, at minimum, filter your pet's water.
Yes, absolutely. Well, do we have anything else to say about this nasty bug?
No,
Nasty, nasty bug.
I mean, anybody who's out there in the rescue world or in the veterinary community, my heart goes out to you for all the things you have seen and how hopeless it has been until now. Because I did take in years ago, I took in like eight little burrito puppies for like a week be between fosters. They took them, the organization pulled them from the shelter, brought them to my house for a week over Christmas because the foster was going to be out of town. And one of the biggest, fears that that rescue had was that they would have come with parvo. So they were checking in with me constantly. You could feel the panic, when I was like, oh, one of them has loose stool. And it was like, what's it like? What's it look like? How often? Because it's such a fear. And it's something that I know is not easily forgotten. So I'm happy that there's hope. And I hope that there's more hope for other like things like distemper and other really potentially very, very dangerous and highly contagious illnesses that affect cats and dogs.
Absolutely. So check with your veterinarian. Just ask, hey, do you have access to this new Elanco canine parvovirus monoclonal antibody? Because the study that they have done so far is very, very promising. So just know ahead of time. That's one of the biggest things is doing your research ahead of time to know, like. When you were saying that earlier, like popped into my head, because you too, rattlesnakes, right? And this having the anti-venom for a rattlesnake bite, like know which
Exactly.
veterinarians around you have
Yes.
that, because in that moment, in that instant, you don't have time to do your research.
Yes.
You need to do
Yes.
your research ahead of time.
Yes. And parvo again is so contagious. Like our shelter in El Paso, last I checked, was still closed because in the spring they had a very serious parvo outbreak. So it's not only the pets that were affected then. It's also the pets that are still being affected because they can't take in strays.
Yeah.
They can't take in owner surrenders. In El Paso, I can only speak to what I see. Dogs are being dumped because they won't receive them at the local shelter. So now it becomes the community's problem. And then if that pet is infected with parvo, then it becomes a very big community problem. So it is really one of those things that is a vicious cycle. And having something to stop it or control it is so key that we want, you and I want to educate as many pet parents to even ask about it, to just recognize the signs of parvovirus. I mean, it's really scary that only 44% of dog parents know what parvovirus is or what it manifests like. So again, reminder, very serious vomiting, very serious diarrhea. It's likely in a younger puppy, and severe lethargy, like they can't lift their heads. That is a super, super sign that something is terrible. Mm-hmm. If something terrible is happening and it needs immediate attention, not call the vet attention, call the emergency vet, tell them you're coming, mm-hmm. kind of attention.
Yeah.
We always are advocates for you calling your emergency vets before coming just to make sure that they can receive you, especially because of the veterinary shortages these days. You don't want to go with your parvo puppy in dire straits only to find that there's a 6-hour wait and you have to go across town to start over, you know, your wait time. So please, please, always call your emergency vets before you come for further instruction too, because they might tell you what to do on the way there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because God, it's just so devastating.
Yeah. And not everybody's close to their vets, right? So like you might need to do something in the vehicle on the way to the vet, mm-hmm. especially if you live in a rural area, and parvovirus is pretty common in these rural shelter environments, because you know they take in a lot of strays, they take in a lot of very unwell pets. All right, well, Kim is calling it. Kim's calling.
She called it. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, guys. Thank you again for being a part of this. Next week, we haven't decided what topic we're going to cover, but we will be here next week at 3 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Central on Monday. And if you have any recommendations or requests for topics for us to cover, please let us know. You can DM me or Jessica. You'll get all of our socials on here on all platforms. So just let us know if there's anything that you want to discuss, and we encourage your participation too. So ask questions. Yeah. You know, make comments, share your stories with us. We do want to hear them.
Yeah.
And thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Bye.